kingdom all his own, sent to fight slavers and pirates, chase smugglers, shepherd pilgrims, and escort the precious bullion on which a whole British army would depend, and not a senior to turn to for advice or guidance, but only his own sense and judgment. Young Ballantyne couldn't follow orders, because he hadn't any beyond a roving commission. His crew were all older than he was, but he must live with them and mess with them, share their hardships and dangers as one of them, and make them like and trust him, because he was what he was, so that when he said go, they'd obey, even unto death. I'd never have done for the Navy. You may fool soldiers by holding aloof and looking martial, but Jack would have seen through me before we'd crossed the bar. That's the hellish thing about life aboard ship. There's nowhere to hide, either your carcass or your nature. We had a taste of Ballantyne's the second day out, just after we passed the Ras Muhammad Point at the foot of Sinai, and the hand in the bow spotted a low, ugly-looking craft with a great lateen sail which sheered away at sight of us, running for a little cluster of islands near the Egyptian shore. "Slaver! Pound to a penny!" yells our young Nelson. "Bosun, clear away the gun. Tompkins, open the arms chest. Sir Harry, I'd be obliged if your fellows would take station two either side, ready to fire if need be. Tally-ho!" And he seized the wheel while his engineer thundered his motor, and our little sloop fairly flew over the water. Ballantyne's dozen tars were diving below deck and emerging with pieces and cutlasses, and I directed my sergeant to place his fellows at the rail as requested, and shocked his military soul by countermanding his order to them to put on their hats and coats. You shoot straighter in shirt sleeves when there's an African sun blazing down on you. But they didn't get the chance, for the slavers reached a rocky island ahead of us and abandoned ship, taking their human cargo with them. We were still half a mile off and powerless to interfere, as a dozen or so white-robed Arabs and upwards of 100 naked niggers, men, women and children, were tumbling ashore and up into the rocks. We could hear their squeals and the crack of the courbashes as the slavers lashed them on, the leader of the gang turning to jeer and gesture obscenely as we hove to a pistol shot offshore. Ballantyne danced with rage and shook his fist. "You disgusting bastards! I'll learn ya!" yells he, his voice fairly cracking. "Bosun! Stand by the gun! No, belay that! Marines, take aim at that son of a bitch! No, damn it, belay that too!" For the slaver's leader had snatched up one of the infants as a shield, and his rascals followed suit, or mingled with the panic-stricken slaves so that we daren't fire. "Oh, you cads!" bawls Ballantyne. "Oh, you cowardly rotters! You shan't escape us! Run her in, bosun! Stand by with your cutlasses, you men! We'll settle your hash, you beastly black villains! You can't outrun us with the slaves! Pistols, Tompkins, and load two for me, and two for Sir Harry, and a cutlass. We'll run 'em to earth in a jiffy, sir, what? Ha-ha!" He was such a happy little blood-spiller, just bursting to be at the enemy, that I hated to spoil his fun. But I was shot if I was going to be plunged into a cut-and-thrust brawl with those desperate brutes, and I had the perfect excuse for overriding him. I bellowed an order to the engineer to hold on, and cut short Ballantyne's falsetto protest. "Sorry, my lad, it's no go. We're carrying an army's treasury, and it ain't to be risked for a gaggle of slaves." "But we can cut 'em up in no time, and rescue the poor souls," cries he. "We've done it before, you know. Bosun'll tell you." "Well, you ain't doing it today," says I, and he was hitting top sea until the bosun shook his head and said I was right.
"Begging your pardon, sir. Can't risk the dollars nohow."
Ballantyne looked as though he would cry, but made the best of it like a good un.
"Quite right, Sir Harry. I wasn't thinking. Forgive me. Damn thoughtless. I say, though, we can sink the beggar's boat. That'll spoil their filthy trade for them. Bosun, man the gun."
"What about the slaves, sir?" says Bosun. "Them black devils is liable to cut their throats out of spite if we sink her."
Ballantyne weighed this for a good 2 seconds, frowning judiciously like Buggins Major, undecided whether to thrash Juggins Minor or set him 100 lines of Virgil, and then snapped,
"No, if we don't scupper 'em, those poor creatures will be sold like cattle. They cannot be worse off if they and those fiends are left stranded, and by gum there'll be one less hell ship running black ivory."
Bosun touched his hat, but pointed out that their 6-pounder would take all day to smash the slaver's timbers.
"Then burn the bugger,"
cries Ballantyne, and two men were sent in the gig to set her ablaze with bundles of tow. She went up like a November bonfire,